Hello, and thank you once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady, and this week I am joined by Lawrence Donegan. A couple of podcasts ago, Lawrence and I discussed various things and ended up rambling on about customer service at football, despite the advanced notification advisory it was going to be, telling you about Buy Them In Sport and various other Buy Them In Twitter feeds that Lawrence has going. So, as promised, this is the return leg of the Buy Them In podcast with Lawrence. We also take time to fit in discussions of the Stan Petrov game and predictions about the Hearts and AC Milan game. And once again, following in the proud footsteps of 198 podcasts before, since this is podcast number 199, we talk from a very ill-informed position of not knowing what Pookie's going to be like and really having done no research about what the Milan team will be like. So this is me, Harry Brady, saying hopefully you will enjoy him, Lawrence Donegan. Through the wonders of Google Plus, I'm actually looking at Mr. Lawrence Donegan right now, and we're recording this podcast on the in a classy fashion. He's behaving like a 12-year-old child and sticking two fingers up at me, but we are ready for another podcast and to finish off the last one, which we finished abruptly, and I said we'd give people more details on Buy Them In. So, Mr. Lawrence Donegan, entrepreneur extraordinaire of the internet Twitter world with the Buy Them In empire that you're building in all sports. Explain your thought process behind the Buy Them In, first of all.
Right. Well, firstly, Buy Them In Sport, BYTHMINSPORT. I'm a big fan of it's a great way of following things. Something happened, it was a golf tournament or something somewhere, and somebody did something in a golf tournament, it might have been Tiger Woods or something, and my timeline exploded. Mm-hmm. Wow, amazing. And I'm looking at this explosion in my timeline going, well, tell me what happened, why has it happened, what's amazing, what's wow? And I just thought, God, there's a serious lack of information on Twitter. I wouldn't follow you if I wasn't interested in your interior life, for instance, right? Or what you thought about this, that, and the next thing. Well, I'm mildly interested, not terribly interested. but in terms of following sport, see, when I worked in newspapers, this is great. You would sit in your computer and you would have the AP feed, Associated Press feed, come down your computer. And it would just tell you breaking news. It would tell you what would happen, right? And that's how I would like my Twitter timeline to be. But instead, it's full of people's thoughts, and that's fine. I'm not complaining about that. It's full of people's, I call them interior thoughts. Yep. I just wanted something that would give you info, and especially info on live sports. So I sat at home on my own doing the Masters this year, and I live tweeted 4 hours a day of the Masters. On my own, it was absolutely exhausting. A wee guy from Wales helped me out, came in and did an hour. And I started with 0 followers on the Thursday morning, first day of the Masters. And by the Sunday afternoon, I had 3,200 followers from a standing start.
Right, that's excellent.
And it was all, it basically was to give the information. Every tweet had to have a piece of information in it, birdie or under par, or what the leaderboard was. Same with football. Had to have the score and had to have the time. So it wasn't just a random tweet appearing on somebody's timeline. I actually told them something that they might have wanted to know.
Yeah.
The great comedy of it, though, is I didn't realise Twitter's got all these incredible rules. You can't overuse frequently used words or something. So if Andy Murray's playing the Wimbledon final, you can't hashtag Andy Murray more than 3 times in 10 tweets or something, or you get suspended. And the Twitters didn't know this. Twitter had a limit of 100 tweets per hour.
I didn't know this.
And that's actually a barefaced lie. The limit is much less than that. Aye, well, there you go. So I'm doing the math. I swear to God, I was exhausted, right? I mean, it's really hard work here. You're watching the telly, you've got the computer going, and man's running around going, turn the telly over. So I get to the Sunday afternoon, after this epic effort, you know, I get to Sunday afternoon, and it goes halfway through the Sunday afternoon, around, my Twitter thing goes, this account is suspended, over-tweeted. So that was my first experience of Twitter rules. Anyway, what turned out, nobody really cared. You know, people were just kind of grateful that I'd kept them going for 3.5 days. And I thought, okay, there's something in that. So the following Tuesday, I thought, well, Man United were playing West Ham. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, I'll just start another one. And I did Buy Them In EPL. And I sat down and did, but man, it was 1-1. 1-1 or 2-2, I can't remember. Anyway, that did, I mean, I got, you know, in this course of 90 minutes, I got 250 followers. Which I thought, that's really quite good. Anyway, so we've kind of scaled it up since then. We've got everything. We've got Buy Them In at Celtic, Buy Them In at Rangers, Buy Them In at SPFL, Buy Them In at EPL. Then we've got Buy Them In at all these kind of English clubs. We've started Rugby League today. Buy Them In Rugby L, not to be confused with Buy Them In Rugby U.
No, because of course Rugby L is the man sport and Rugby U is the puss sport.
Well, and it's been, you know, I think we've got about 20 feeds. We've now got 30,000 Twitter followers. It's really quite good fun. I mean, some of the guys who come on are okay. One of my big things is I've won a lot of female voices. Because you look at the papers and there's not a lot of women sports writers. And I just think this would be a great, you know, what a great chance, you know. Because the great thing about this, Harry, is that you have no legacy at all. You can make up the rules as you go along. It's just brilliant, you know. So I'm just, you know, I tried to do the second test in the Ashes with all women, you know, for instance. I didn't quite make it, but most of the, you know, it's a couple of hours that were done by a bloke somewhere. Just things like that. It's good fun. There's some of the people, I swear to goodness, one of my favourite feeds on Twitter is Mirror Football. I think it's really funny.
Yeah.
I swear to God, maybe in 5 months we've found 10 to 15 people who are that kind of quality. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of guys. There's a guy, I don't even know where he comes from. He's called TV Bite on Twitter. And right. I swear to goodness, he's just brilliant. There's one of the Celtic guys, Remy McSween, one of the Celtic Underground guys.
Yeah.
Again, just brilliant. You know, Eddie Pearson's done one. Again, really, really great. You know, just, there's so much talent out there. I remember listening to Off the Ball, and who's the guy? Phil Dickford.
Yes.
Who's the guy that does the Chick Young?
Jonathan Watson.
And he was going, they were reading out, Tam Cowan was reading the puns or whatever, and Phil Dickford said, I can't believe how much talent there is just out there. And it is, it's incredible. You know, how many people who come forward are absolutely brilliant at it. It's a really good format. It's good fun to do. It's just been great. I sound like a total salesman here, but it's been really good fun. We think we've got a business plan. It's kind of complicated. I won't bore you with it, but you know, it just involves getting as many people involved. It's a bit like the kind of ultimate plan is just to be like appointment social network. You know, it's not like Facebook or whatever or Twitter, where, you know, Twitter will say, well, we'll get 600 million users. That's all very well, but who are they and when will they be there, you know? And we can say, well, at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, we'll give you 50,000 Celtic fans. You know, if you want to sell them something, that's great. If you want to converse or have a conversation or get involved in an argument with 50,000 Celtic fans, on you go. You know, we'll provide a platform. In terms of the kind of model is that there's an outfit called Bleacher Report in America.
Uh-huh.
Which basically started as it was five college kids. It was a blogging platform. Everybody could contribute. They'd publish everything. And user-generated content, it's called. And the thing about the problem with Bleacher Report was there was no quality control. They treated people like crap. So that's our kind of model.
People like crap?
No. We just want to do it, you know, not to make the mistakes of Bleacher Report. They have Bleacher Report now 7 years old, and they're now trying to furiously correct all the mistakes they made at the start. So we're trying to target, you know, just try and put it as a kind of quality product. So we've got kind of rules. We don't like smearing. We you don't like abuse aimed at other clubs. You know, just, you know, if you're doing by the minute Celtic, just do the Celtic game, right? I don't want to hear your views on Rangers or hear your views on whatever. You're doing Rangers, I don't want to hear your views on Celtic. You do my, you know, Man United, City, whatever. Just do the game. You know, do it as well and as funnily, and, you know, just have a bit of fun doing it, and that's all.
Actually, see, having tweeted live from the Celtic AGM, it's actually really difficult to do anything other than tweet about the very thing that's happening in front of you. You're saying about don't do Rangers, don't do Man City, whatever. I would actually find it really difficult because your brain's concentrating on, this has happened, I need to relay that information.
Yeah.
You're needing to do it quickly, because if you don't do it immediately, what's the point in doing it?
I know. Well, I remember, that was, what a great service that was. I remember that day. See, you were on my timeline that day, and it was excellent. You know, because it was just the facts. It really good. It was giving me something I had no access to anywhere else. You know, I certainly wasn't going to get, that's the other great thing about Benjamin, well, I think, is that, you know, I wasn't going to get what you were telling me on the official Celtic feed, that's for sure. I mean, one of the things that really amuses me, you know, if you look at during a game or whatever and you get the official feed,
yes,
you know, it's like, oh, so close from Anthony Stokes. And our version of it is, for fuck's sake, Anthony Stokes, what are you doing? You know, it's, and it's the same for every club, you know, because what you found is that a lot of people are really pissed off with the official feeds. Actually, to be fair, I'm not saying this because I really like the people that do this. The Celtic feed is actually one of the better ones, you know.
Yeah.
But some of them are, I mean, talk about Pravda, it's just absurd. So that's, you know, people like that. And here, I'll stop boring you, but one of the kind of, the long-term thing is to get it, you know, get the thing up and running, get a proper website and get our own kind of maybe get up on Twitter. But what I've noticed, I mean, as a journalist, what I've noticed now in journalism is there's a real appetite for what is called long-form journalism, you know, long reads.
Yeah.
You know, there was a magazine, The Observer Sports Monthly. I did some pieces for it years ago when it was going, and it was a brilliant magazine. Right, they would say to you, off you go and write, I remember they said to me, off you go to New Jersey and write 5,000 words about this high school basketball player called LeBron James. You know, and it was, wow, I mean, I got to see LeBron James when he was 16 playing basketball in a high school gym. And I think there's a place for that kind of stuff. And I would love, you know, if we could get Bynum up and running properly and use that as a kind of bridgehead, bringing in behind it, you know, that kind of long-form, serious, you know, well-researched sports journalism, the kind of stuff that doesn't get published anywhere anymore.
Yeah.
If you look at all the good sports writers in the States, there's a new website called, Grantland is pretty good, although it's kind of shady, and, you know, it's an adjunct ESPN. It's basically long-form sports writing. And then there's that one called Sports on Earth, which is basically, I think it's been founded by a guy called Will Leach. Will Leach was the founding editor of a website called Deadspin, which is part of the Gawker Media Group. Sorry, I'm probably just getting pretty deep.
No.
So there's a real appetite, I think, you know, for long form sports journalism, well researched, you know, stuff that'll tell you something that you don't know, stuff that, you know, might be published in the New Yorker, but just nobody'll publish it anymore.
Well,
in New York.
It's interesting you say that, because on the few occasions when Radio Scotland have their media talk thing, the one thing that in the 2 or 3 years that they've done that on and off, the one thing that continually comes through is that the newspapers no longer have the budget to allow a guy to go and do a story. So, you know, their complaint is they don't go anywhere. Basically, all their stories seem to be written from their laptop or their PC in the office, and that's it. And it's got to be a 500-word thing.
Well, a word in defence of my in the mainstream media. It's true. And it's just true. I mean, even look at The Guardian now. You know, which is a great tradition, and if you look at the news pages, they'll invest fortunes in investigating Murdoch, investigating the stuff in the States with the national, whatever they're called, spy agency or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's no appetite or investment for doing the same thing in sport. And again, I have no access to what the Guardian's figures are, but I bet your bottom dollar that most of the traffic, or a big, huge chunk of the traffic on the Guardian website is sport. Yeah, there doesn't appear to be any investment made in sport, you know. And they've got some great people there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they don't, nothing ever appears. And it's the same for newspapers. And whatever it's like down in Fleet Street, you can multiply it 10 times in Scotland.
Yeah.
I think there's one paper that I think Scotland really, really tries, given the excruciating limitations on resources. I think Scotland Sunday does a fair effort, you know, that stays off the diary, to try and do things that are different, you know, and that's pretty good. But it's tough. It's just tough. But wouldn't it be great to be able to turn around to somebody and say, you know, well, there you go, off you go for 4 weeks, you know, we'll pay you $5,000 or £5,000. Come back with a great piece about doping in German football or something like that. I'd love that.
Yeah,
I can dream.
Yeah,
I have a dream.
But the irony is, you know, deep down that there are those stories are out there ready to be written, such as the Spanish doctor who was involved in the Lance Armstrong doping, where pretty much the Spanish courts turned around and said, and what we don't want to come out is the doping that's been associated with Real Madrid and Barcelona, so you're just not covering it. I mean, it's an open goal for someone, an editor, to say, you go out to Spain for 3 months and come back with a story that that two of the world's biggest sites have been doping their players.
Well, you know, Pep Guardiola, tangentially, Pep Guardiola, he got a drugs ban. It was subsequently overturned when he was playing in Italy. I think it was 1990, 1991. Yeah. But it was overturned 10 years later, I believe. But I think it was at Perugia. Again, I'm talking off the top of my head here. The doctor at the time went with Pep, who was involved in the Italian club at the time, ended up at Barcelona with Pep.
Yeah.
That seems a bit odd to me. I'm not seeing anything untoward went on, but it's, you know, it's not generally known. The other thing, a big fascination for me, is the whole match-fixing thing.
Yes.
Cursory, you know, you type match fixing into Google, and I swear to goodness, every country in Europe has had some problem with it in the last 3 or 4 years, including Spain, including Germany, obviously Italy, everywhere. Finnish football has basically had to be, you know, it was rife with it. You know, what a great story. Even UEFA now, they're so embarrassed by it all, they've actually had to do something about it. But it's a great topic that's not really touched upon.
But the reason it can happen is because the media don't write about it. I mean, despite things, one of my frustrations about the Scottish media is there tends to be, I suppose I'm being a bit, judgmental here and picking the likes of Derek Johnson rather than, you know, Tom English or whatever. But in general, there seems to be an attitude of, yes, but that's what the funny-skinned Johnny Foreigner does. We don't do that type of thing over here. Well, as you pointed out, if it happens in Germany, Spain, Finland, it happens in Scotland.
Well, of course, I have no proof. You know, I'm making wild allegations. It's a general trend across world football. There's a one that I'd recommend to everybody who's listening. It's a great book by a Canadian academic called Declan Hill. He wrote a book, I mean, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, called The Fix, which he kind of spent time with kind of match fixers and guys who'd fixed football games, quotes and quotes fixed football games in Africa and in Europe. And it's a really, really interesting book. The most startling allegation in this book, which was never published in the UK, incidentally, I think you can get it on Amazon, was that remember England played Ecuador in the 2006 World Cup? Well, the accusation was that game was fixed. That the fixers had got to the Ecuadorian team.
Right.
Okay, and England still only just won it. I think it was 1-0 in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But also, I remember, I'm trying to remember where I heard it. It was someone talking about the type of, and being someone who's into cricket, obviously you've had the scandals about spot fixing, about no balls, you know, the fifth ball of an over will be a no ball. And there is an element of, that doesn't intrinsically affect the game, but look how cricket dealt with it. Whereas in football, if somebody says, well, you know, people have been doing betting about a throw-in happening 30 seconds into the game. It tends to be of but that's all right because it doesn't affect the game attitude. Uh-huh. Now, I remember, as I say, I was listening, I wish I could remember what it was. They were talking about Far Eastern betting happening on particularly lower league games in Scotland and sometimes even reserve games in Scotland. And it was to do with the fact that if you were live on the phone to someone, there would be a 3 to 5 second delay on a goal going in real time to actually being able to be recorded anywhere. And so what these guys were doing was there'd be a guy in the lower league games in England and Scotland sitting in the back of the stand on a permanent line and would say, go. Somebody would do a bet immediately. Uh-huh. 5 seconds later, the odds would change and they'd get it.
Can I tell you something? Right, this is one of the great benefits of Buy Them In Sport. Apparently on the golf feed, we do the golf on the American golf on a Sunday night. The golf feed over here, where I'm sitting, or somebody in the States doing it, is 20 seconds ahead of Sky, which is showing it in the UK. So so if Tiger Woods has a triple bogey or something, uh-huh, you're getting it in 20 seconds ahead. I mean, you're welcome.
That's
what I call service.
Yeah, well, exactly. And do you know what? I'm going to pay a bit more attention to Buy Them In Golf and see if I can pay for my phone tariff to cover the cost of being online all night.
All right. What's the other? And we're doing the Ashes cricket, and we're doing the Winter Ashes as well. That'll be coming up. And then I think we're doing the Four Nations rugby.
Uh huh.
And not a sport that I'm hugely taken with, but it's there. I think it might be ahead of the old. Might be ahead of the old UK coverage, by the way. I mean, you never know. Not that I'm suggesting that you use that advantage in any way, shape, or form.
Hey, if the advantage is there, but getting back to the match fixing and betting, the bigger thing for me has been the chat of the football people around Ian Black, where there's been an element of, well, of course we all bet. It's just you shouldn't bet against your own team. No. You shouldn't bet on anything connected with your team at all.
Well, yeah. But firstly, before we go any further, concerning Black, there's no suggestion of any match fixing or... So let's get that clear before we go any further.
Yes.
The rules are kind of odd. I've got a couple of thoughts on this. One is that why shouldn't footballers be allowed to bet on football? You know, as long as the games that don't involve their own teams. I just can't see... I mean, that's too prescriptive, I think. You know, come on. Well, I don't bet. I've never bet, actually. But why can't you bet on football? But in terms of betting on your own team, you know, win, lose or draw, it doesn't matter. I'll just quickly go through. Do you know the story of Pete Rose? Pete Rose is a really famous...
Was that a guy in the 60s?
60s and 70s. He was a really famous... I think the all-time hits leader or something like that, you know, in baseball.
Yeah.
And Charlie Hustle, they called him, because he was a guy, you know, he was a real trier, this guy. He just couldn't, you know, amazing. And he ended up managing the Cincinnati Reds, and it came out that he had bet on games involving his own team. Now, it was never proved if he bet for them or against them, but it, the baseball authorities just cracked it, just said, no, that's it, you can't bet on your own, and he was banned for life. And the argument was, it doesn't matter if you're betting on your own team to win, because what does that say about the games that you don't bet on?
Yeah.
You know, does that mean that you know that your team, as a manager, you're making your team try harder in the games that you're betting on them to win than you, you know, or if you're not betting on them, you say, all right, on you go, lads, have a great day. But then when you bet on them, you're like, right, lads, get in there, just murder them. So that's the issue there. As for betting against your own team, I mean, that's just, well, that's a minefield, isn't it?
I mean, I understand the concept in that I don't bet that much, but I bet, and occasionally there's a mindset of betting against Celtic so that if they lose, at least you've got a consolation, right? Now, that's okay because I'm a fan. I am not a player.
Just stop this a minute. Will you bet against Celtic?
I have, yes.
We may have to have a committee meeting or something.
No, but
a board meeting or
it's more along the lines of, well, I'll put this bet on so that if Celtic lose, at least I've won some money. And it's more of a tempting fate mindset than anything else.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah, you might have a point, actually. But I've just, so, you know, getting back to the evil acting, you know, it's come down today that he's been, well, basically a three-game ban. I mean, yeah. 10 games, 7 suspensions. Potentially a three-game, because he's never going to go and do it again. I can't imagine he's going to go and do it again to get the 7 games in. Could you imagine? Oh, my. So it's a three-game ban for, and again, reading the papers closely, I mean, it has been briefed that he has bet on games. Again, who knows? I mean, I think there's three teams covering the period of the gambling thing.
Yeah.
So who knows what team he's playing for when he bet on them not to win? I mean, that to me is just staggering. You know, it certainly takes it out of the four. You know, to me, to my mind, it takes it out of the range of a three-game ban. Surely, you know, what does it say about? To protect the reputation and integrity of the game, surely, and you know, to somebody's doing that and you're giving them a three-game ban. What is that saying about the game? About what the SFA think about the game? Not unless, you know, maybe it was a coup. I mean, again, that's a tricky one, actually.
If you accept that it's allowable for a bet involving a player's team, you then have to start bringing in a financial threshold. Because you then have to say, well, it's okay if he wants to... Because I heard somebody talking about it and said, oh, come on, if he sticks a wee tenner on, right, okay, so it's a tenner. Right, see, for a third division player not playing for Rangers, a third division player sticking 100 quid on when he might win 300 quid, well, that's actually more than his match fee. So that starts to become relevant. But for a player playing for Rangers on $5,000 a week, 300 quid's the equivalent of a tenner for somebody else. So you then start to, where do you draw the line as to what the financial bit is?
So you've got to, well, again, you know, you have to draw the line at you don't do it at all. You know, there's no grey areas. You know, it's either black or white. You know, you either allow it or you don't allow it. And clearly, you can't allow people to bet on their own team not to win games. You just can't do that. Yeah. You know, you can't allow that. It's absurd. You know, a total failure of governance by the SFA. You know, I think that's really obvious. And if you look at examples, again, my experience or my knowledge of this boat, because I live in the States, so this thing would never be tolerated in the States. You know, a player would have been out for the whole season. I think I saw this, the coach of the, that's a good one, the coach of the New Orleans Saints NFL team was kicked out of the game for a year because he had knowledge of a bounty system amongst his defensive lineup. You know, if you got a quarterback, you got paid $500 out of a little kitty. So the coach had knowledge of it. You know, it was a kind of little thing run by the kind of defensive squad. So he wasn't even kind of running it, or he wasn't giving up the money. He just had, he vaguely knew that it was going on. And lo and behold, the whole thing spilled out, and the guy was kicked out. You know, the Saints had just won the Super Bowl. And this is like taking, Neil Lennon or David Moyes and just get right, you're out of the game for a year. So there's a kind of no tolerance attitude. I think that's probably right. You have to protect the reputation and the integrity of the sport.
You do, but you see, I think the reason for the lesser three-match ban was all of this nonsense chat implying there was ambiguity about the rules. Like, put it this way, when I was 17, 18, one of my friends played for Clyde and was playing under 18 level for Scotland. So when I was 17, 18, I knew, and I didn't play football, I knew that you couldn't bet. Because I remember him telling me about how irritated he was at some of the bets that his teammates put on games. And he was only 17, 18 himself. So that would be for me 25 years ago. Now, I'm not in the game, and 25 years ago, I knew that footballers shouldn't bet.
Aye. Well, and the kind of lie was given to that. I think when the allegations first came out, there was a few interviews kicking around on STV and BBC. You know, it was a football guy with a guy put up in Inverness. I mean, the rules are clear. I think everybody knew the rules. I mean, to say otherwise is, it's just ridiculous. You know, you might not think the rule, and I personally, I think the rule's too draconian, as I said. You know, I think you should be allowed, bet on football, as long as you're not betting on your own team. Although that in itself is hard to govern, isn't it?
Well, it is.
But everybody knew.
Oh, I think back about, you know, we've mentioned cricket, and I like my cricket, and obviously cricket's had things like the spot betting and all of those things in cricket.
Sure.
You know, guys went to jail for betting on cricket, or they didn't themselves bet.
That's right.
They just accepted right. doing some altering their behaviour on behalf of a betting. They went to jail. But on the other hand, there is also, if you go back to 1981, when famously England had that dramatic overturn, Dennis Lilly bet on Australia to lose because Australia were 500-1. And he always jokes about...
That's right.
He asked the bus driver to go and put the money on because he just couldn't see a set of circumstances where, in a two-horse race, if somebody was 500-1, you didn't stick a wee flutter on the 500-1 because it was so ridiculous.
That's right.
I mean, Rodney Marsh claims that they never ever went and collected the winnings because they were too embarrassed. And maybe the bus driver did.
You're absolutely. I remember. You'll imagine what happened to Dennis Lilly now. You know, of course he wouldn't have done it now.
No, he wouldn't. But the principle of it was he sent them. You know, getting back to he sent the bus driver to do it. I mean, you know, say I was a professional footballer. What's to stop my brother putting a bet on for me? Absolutely nothing, and nobody could ever prove that it was my bet on my behalf. So I appreciate that grey area, but there's surely the football authorities, if somebody goes and sets up an online account in their own name and the betting company contact the football authorities and say, we are very suspicious about the way these odds, these bets have been getting laid, and hey, we recognise that guy's name. That's fairly open and shut case, I'd have thought.
Actually, just going back to the Declan Hill book, the fix that I was talking about earlier on, which again really interesting is people think, well, match fixing is you go in, you go into the big team and you give them all money and the big team get beat in a short result. You know, that's how they think match fixing works, but that's never how it works. What it is, the fixers always go after the little team.
Yeah.
You know, because the bet isn't a straight win or loss. The bet is number of goals, it's spot fixings, how many goals in the second half. You know, it's how many penalties. You know, how many red cards. It's all the kind of spot. It's all the spot betting. You know, and that's where the fixing comes. It's not about fixing the match so that the big team gets beaten in a shock result 2-5-0 by the wee team. It's far more sophisticated than that. Now, if you look at the Asian gambling markets, the big thing there is spot betting. Yeah. That's the kind of main interest. It's not the kind of win-loss thing because that's not exciting enough. It's spot gambling. And football is wide open. Well, you know, the famous, the Matt Letizia stuff, first throwing. You've got to get it, give me the ball, he hoofs it out of the park because that's the bet. And I think it's a long time since, I don't even know if they do anymore. I don't know how much spot betting there is in British football. I don't know if any of the companies offer anything on spot betting. Probably don't.
I don't know if they do throw-ins and things like that, but I mean, there's still lots of things about bookings and sending offs and all these things.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, there was the case where the Motherwell was at Jennings, the Motherwell player. That was an interesting one. Anyone probably just cross over that pretty quickly.
Yes, yes. But it does get in, it feeds into your buy them in stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
About how, and your journalism thing about, it's left out there because nobody investigates it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing to
nobody,
do...
And there's a lot of... there's a lot of great blogs out there that don't have a home. Wouldn't it be great? I don't know if you follow Swiss Ramble.
Yes,
The Google Planet guy. You know, I think he's kind of now tangentially involved with Guardian, I'm not sure. But wouldn't it be great if he was, part of the family? I've already got it down in some sort of Matthew. I'm coming to the family.
Well, the important
thing, I was going to say it'd be great if providing him with an audience and providing us with copper bottom reputation.
Yes,
but I just think the whole point is there's masses of talent there, just masses of it. It's amazing. There's folks at home, they've got 23 followers on Twitter and they're really frustrated. sports writer, and the time. And it's just great that, you know, it'd be great if they had a find a voice and find an audience. That's all.
And as we talked about, you don't obviously have to give away your whole business plan, but anybody semi-astute listening to this is going to say, right, okay, so you're building this family. Can you feed the family?
Well, yeah, that's going to be a tricky one, that one. Well, yeah, you can. That's, you know, see, so far I think we've spent $1,000 on the whole company. The empire is worth $1,000. So, as soon as we got, as soon as I got any money right before, I would pay people for minute by minute. You know, I just, you know, because I'm just doing it because it's something that excites me. You know, I'm not, you know, I just, you know, if we got money, I'd like to start paying people. Even if it was £25 an MBM or something like that. In terms of long term making it work, I think there's something in it. Everybody with internet startups will say, oh, there's an advertising model. But I do really think there is a powerful advertising model here. I think you can say, as I said before, it's like an appointment social network. You can say to somebody, you know, hey, Mr. Golf Club Maker, you know, on Sunday from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock, we'll have 100,000 golf people, you know, on our network here, on our Buy Them In Golf. You know, sell them what you want. You know, sell them some golf clubs. And that's a pretty, you know, because the audience is already self-selecting.
Yep.
You know, it's not like you have, the advertiser gets a big lump of an audience and then has to try and sift through them. You know, our audience is already self-selected. I mean, if you are on the Buy Them In Golf, you're by definition a golf fanatic or interested in golf.
Yeah.
Ergo, you will be interested in buying the latest whiz-bang driver or whatever. I mean, that's the theory, you know.
And then not to be judgmental, but the likelihood is you're also likely to be under the age of early 50s.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. Although, yeah, I think so. Because, well, judging by, well, most people on Twitter are under 50, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I assume. And so it's a good demographic, you know.
Yeah.
Although a lot of people are, like, we've got two or three contributors. In fact, there's a couple of guys actually who are, I think, 14 or 15. There's a little guy on Bynum Rangers. I think his name is Alex. And he's absolutely fantastic. I think he's done a couple of games, and he's really great. And I think he's 14 or 15 years old. So, you know, and there's a guy, really good guy, who does Arsenal and Formula One and all that. He's not going to be buying a new car. I think his name is Matt. So Matt's not going to be buying a new Formula One, a new Ferrari. So we can't really. But yeah, I think it's a pretty, well, to my, you know, simple mind, it seems like a pretty reasonable proposition as an advertising revenue model. But we'll see anyway. For my sins, I watched all the pre-season games on Celtic TV, and we had a couple of really, really good looking kids. There's a Henderson midfield guy.
Yeah. You
know, and really, you know, he was playing with men, and I mean, Celtic weren't really at full pelt, and a couple of the other teams were.
Yeah.
And he was really assured and kind of confident on the ball. Just, you know, maybe physically not quite up to it, but he looked really impressive. And there was a kid at a left back. Again, I can't remember the name. But again, he looked, you know, good on the ball, like a real proper prospect, you know, who maybe not physically quite up to it, but, you know, it would be great to see them. I think you could use some of the SPFL games to get these kids a run out. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, I mean, the point I made to Petrov was, but I do understand the problem of a football manager, which is us football fans. That's the biggest problem for a football manager.
You're right. Actually, we did the minute by minute of the Petrov game on Sunday. Great, actually. Actually, I did it, and it was great because there wasn't much emphasis on doing the score, which was really a bit of a relief, I have to say. But it was good. It was a great occasion. I kept a crying score. I think I only got there three or four times. There were so many great moments, you know.
I thought it was quite interesting. There was quite a few people made the same sort of joke on Twitter, saying things like, there's a guy near me, must be chopping some onions. You know, that type of...
Aye, that's right. Aye.
For their tears,
It was great, you know. And it wasn't wasn't especially modelling, and I think, you know, or I think that's because, you know, Petrov, a pretty dignified guy, and a very, seemed like a very dignified family, having his wife and kids in it, and it was just great, actually. It was good seeing some of the players, some, you know.
Do you know what was really good for me, and I can't remember how many, you're just marginally older than me, and... See, growing up, so I was born in 1970. So the Lisbon Lion team, I have a vague recollection of Tommy Gemmell playing for Dundee as player manager when his belly was hanging out over his shorts. And a very vague recollection of, will Jimmy Johnson be able to play this week or not? But apart from that, I have no recollection of the Lisbon Lions yet. Right up through my 20s. The heroes of Celtic were a team that I never saw play in the flesh. And for me, one of the great things about the players that are playing in Petrov was there's a group of players who are heroes for another generation. We're not having to harp back to 67 to create some players who've just finished and they're heroes for everybody. That's what's great for me about it.
I know. Again, I mean, how good did Lubo look? He looked fantastic. I mean, really, actually, he seemed to run a lot more than he did. I thought, and I kept it, I think Lennon's pass completion rate was 100%. I mean, he didn't misplace a pass. But he looked something, and Sutton looked, you know, Sutton looks as if he could still play. I mean, I know everybody said, but Sutton did look as if he could still play.
I remember hearing Chris Waddle talk about, because Chris Waddle had dropped down the leagues because he didn't want to stop playing football. And he said he had to drop down the leagues because of his inability to play at pace.
Aye.
And he said, but the problem of dropping down the league and inability to play at pace, but I could still play a much better level than everyone else without moving. And my problem was my brain was still the same pace.
That was a staggering thing. It was staggering. I never watch any of these things. I can't bother with them. But I was watching it. And it was just the difference in pace was mind-blowing. It was about one third of the pace of a Scottish Premier League game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how slow it was. It was amazing. Well, so, I mean, hats off to the boys that are playing full-time right now.
Yes. And then the other thing was I sat right next to Stan Petrov when we did the podcast, and he was bemoaning not to being fit. And I was looking at him thinking, well, you're 100 times better than me, pal. And then he's on the park looking a bit chubby and a bit overweight.
That's right.
And what that did was, I remember a few years ago, I knew Adam Virgo, and I knew how absolutely slim Adam Virgo was in real life. But on the football pitch, he looked overweight. And what that emphasised to me was, despite all the criticism we have of modern footballers, how supremely fit these guys must really be. Because there's a guy who I know in real life is fit, but because you're used to seeing footballers look really slim, he looks overweight. But sitting right next to me, Stan Petrov.
Yeah. Was... I remember we were on a... Was what? Was he who you...
No, I was just saying, sitting next to me, he was really... I was going to say really fit, but it then sounds like I fancy him in the modern parlance for these things. So... Carry on.
I remember we were in Washington, on holiday in Washington, D.C. in kind of 1990 or something, that's how old I am. And we're walking at the Lincoln Memorial, and here comes is the AC Milan team. I think we're on some American tour or something. You know, Maldini and Baresi was still playing. I mean, these guys just look like, I'm interested in the horses. I mean, they did look like thoroughbred animals, you know, thoroughbred horses. I'm standing there like Dobbin or something. But yeah, they're different, you know, different physical specimens. You know, they're fun. You got to tip your hat to the old, tip your hat to professional footballers. Although what is interesting when they do stop, you know, just how quickly it goes.
Yes.
They're an inflatable life raft or something. Somebody pulls the ripcord, you know, and they just go.
Yeah, you get the impression that they've had, however long it is, 20 years of being fit permanently, and they just think, you know what, I'm going to have a rest, and I'm going to eat those pizza and chips that I've always wanted to eat, and have those couple of pints of lager that I didn't have, and it just goes, balloons right up.
Aye, well, I've earned, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it was great. So, aye, and it was good. Enjoyed that game. But
glad to
be back at proper football.
Yeah. So you did the Bide Them In. Who's doing Bide Them In of Hearts on Saturday, 12:45 your time? So that is that in the middle of the night for you?
No, that is it. 12:40. Oh, it is 12:40. That's why somebody. I usually do it because it's. But that's 4:45 in the morning for me. It's a 4:15 call. I can't remember. I think Chris is a guy called Chris is doing it. See, when you become a media mogul, you know, you tend to
you lose track of your staff.
No, I don't look after that vertical, to use the parlance of Silicon Valley. I don't look after the Scottish FIFA vertical. You know, I look after the golf. What do I look after now? Golf, NFL, bit of tennis. So yeah, I was looking at we have this calendar. Actually, we're doing about 130, 140 hours of live sport this week.
Wow.
I was looking at the calendar and I was shocked to find that I'm not getting a Celtic game for about 3 weeks.
You need to sack.
I'll jump on and do the AC Milan game next week.
I was going to say, you need to sack directly in charge of buying them in sales.
Aye, that's right. Aye. No, anyway, so. Some guys. I mean, they're all good. I say this. I mean, I probably because I'm kind of known as a Celtic fan. You know, that feat's incredible. You do it on a Saturday, and it's. I mean, you know, you get the connect line on your Twitter timeline. It just goes bonkers.
Yeah.
There's just tons of people, you know, on it. So you get a sense of our kind of community. It's quite good fun.
Yeah. So, what's your predictions for the game on Saturday? Because it's quite. Because obviously. Speak about AC Milan in a second, but that's quite a dilemma for Neil Lennon's team selection for that, because Hearts will be flying about, because they always do, and he's not going to want Pukki picking up a leg break immediately before an away game in Milan.
I know. Well, the good thing is the Milan game's on Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it's so, Wednesday, I think. The Milan game's Wednesday, I think.
Milan, my guy. So... Well, the good thing is it's a Saturday, so there's a bit of a longer gap, isn't there? I'll be interested, actually. Although he's got a new Finnish guy.
Yeah.
I think it was Hampton Borick. I mean, there's a squad's actually, when you look at it, the squad's quite substantial now. There's a lot of bodies there.
Yeah.
So you would although I read that Moyakola's injured. I don't know what.
I think he's 27 and he's played 100, he's started 100 games of professional football in his career.
Oh, is that right? Well, it's like Bo Richter, he's two games, he's been injured twice.
Yes.
But I was thinking about that this morning, the Dutch boys generally they have a reputation of they don't want to play if they're not 100% fit. I'm speaking from the benefit of actually seeing Hearts live this year. When I was over, I saw Hearts play. It's all kids, isn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't one of the hip guys complain about, you know, getting beat by an under 21 side or something in the Edinburgh Derby? I mean, they're pretty limited, you know, so I can't imagine it would be the first 11. Even though Tynecastle, I just think, again, going back to you think Aberdeen were, you know, probably the strongest, I think Aberdeen probably the strongest, you know, the other teams in the league, and certainly up to Pretoria and absolutely Boston, you know, I can't see Hearts, you know. Yeah, with plenty of enthusiasm, plenty of running about and all that, but I just don't see. Well, I think it's got a vastly superior squad. I think probably Neil Lennon could probably pick 2 11s and both of them beat the Hearts first team.
Yeah.
Since he won't get beat 4-0 or something.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I wonder if with the Scotland game on Friday night and then the Scotland game in Macedonia, I wonder whether Brown and Mulgrew will play on Saturday or whether they might get a rest ready for Milan, since obviously, as we talked about in the last podcast, McGrew's Neil Lennon's love child.
Well, I think you McGrew skeptics are going to have to just hold your hands up. You know, I think. I've no kind of great, but I think I get the impression that Scott Brown's the one guy who wants to play every single game he can play, and
yeah.
You know, just to try and run off some of that energy.
Yes, he's got ADHD.
So he might play McGrew. Well, he's obviously got the secret dossier, hasn't he? McGrew's got the secret dossier, so he's going to play if he wants to play.
Yes.
No, well, perhaps, you know, you would think common sense would say, because you're going to, you know, if you're going to Milan, you're going to have to play you're going to have to, I would imagine, play two in front of the back four. You play a 4-2, whatever, 4-2-3-1 or 4-2-2-2, or whatever. So McGrew and Brown, especially, you know, the way that they're playing right now, the way they're playing for Scotland, they're absolutely essential. So it would, a sensible thing would be to rest them for Saturday. But then working against that, as you've got Brown, probably wants to play in every game. And the other thing is Lennon can't seem to play, you know, can't seem to be picking 11 with Charlie McGrew. Which I think is great, because I'm the world's biggest Charlie McGrew. What a left foot he's got. I just think he's a fantastic player. Oh, curiously, you know, you say you pick him for set pieces, but when was the last time he scored from a set piece? A long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Stokes took the one against Dundee United in the last game.
And you've already Stokes, and he seems to get seems to be a kind of more, you know, when they're arguing over who takes the free kicks, you know, McGrew usually gets pushed out of the way. I mean, Stokes seems to bully the other boy. Damn, give me the ball, you know, or I'll batter you, kind of that playground thing.
Yes, he does seem to be a bit. He's very moany, and I do wonder whether they go, oh, do you know what? I can't be arsed with this. You just can't take it.
That's right. I tell you what, if I was playing, see when I'm playing for Celtic, Stokes is not taking the beat. If I win a free kick in the edge of the box, I'm taking it, right? Stokes is not.
Actually, just as an aside, I don't know if I put it on the podcast when I first was introduced to Stillian Petrov when he was talking away, and I said, Stillian, can I just tell you, you're the man who made me realise I wasn't going to play for Celtic. And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, when a guy starts playing who's younger than you, and you're nowhere near the fringes of the squad, you have to face up to the fact you're never going to get in that game for Celtic that you always dreamed about as a child.
Hang on a minute, you were nowhere near the fringes of the squad, you were nowhere near the world, the fringes of the world in which the squad was picked.
Yes, exactly, yes. No, I like to put it, I like to at least let myself down gently by saying I was nowhere near the fringes of the squad, at least put it that way,
I would imagine that it'll be that. It'd be a good chance to, I would imagine he'll pick the team, I can't even pronounce his name, the new Finnish guy, the centre forward, the thing from Schalke. Is it right? Well, you need to give him a run. Who else did they sign? I can't even remember who we signed in the transfer window.
I think, I was impressed against Dundee United. I just thought our centre-backs of Ambrose and Van Dijk cruised through that game.
You've hit one of my hobby horses. We haven't watched all the pre-season games. And straight away, Van Dijk to me looked like a player, a proper player. In fact, you reminded me quite a lot of Paul Elliott. I know they were only pre-season games, but that kind of, you know, physical presence, you know, he seemed to, you know how some footballers kind of run, you know, they kind of run and it's all arms and legs and whatever. He's one of these guys that seems to glide, and he didn't seem super, super quick, but he seemed to just glide, a proper athlete. And I think he's already proved that what a foot he's got on him. You know, he can ping a ball. So he looked like a great player to me. I think, you know, as I say, I think he'll
develop. I think he takes free kicks as well.
Didn't he hit the bar somewhere? I can't remember. But a shot, it might have been a pre-season game. I can't. Those games just kind of go in a blur for me. But he's a fantastic player. And hopefully, well, I mean, Ambrose and Van Dijk, that'll be the, I would imagine that'll be the centre back pair, and you know, get as many games as possible together, I think, so you can get an understanding going, you know, so that'll be fine. My big thing just looking at the next couple of games is how to accommodate Adam Matthews. I really like Matthews, you know, and I know Lustig played for Sweden on Friday, didn't he? So he's back.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it was a toss-up between these two, I mean, it's just I know Lustig is taller, you know, that height and all that. But I just think Matthews is played really, and I think Lustig's had a pretty slow start to the season. I'd certainly give Matthews a run on Saturday.
Yeah, I thought Lustig away in against Karagandy played like the player who's in his first 3 or 4 games for Celtic, and you're thinking, oh, I'm not sure if this guy's up to it.
But then you look at his record, you know how many Swedish caps, I don't know how many he's got, but a proper pedigree. But I don't know what it's been. I wasn't saying that. He's been up. He's a quite a good, attacking force. You know, again with height and all that.
Yeah.
Although he should have scored against Karagandy. All the games kind of blur. Should have scored that header and basically a free header after the 20 minutes of all.
I was going to say, Lennon seems to. I get the impression that Lennon thinks Lustig's slightly more defensive than Matthews.
Aye, maybe.
And so he's more likely to play him. You what?
I said, don't underestimate the Swedish influence on the backroom staff, you know?
Yeah. But what I like about Matthews, and I can't remember what game it was. Was it last season in Europe? Was it last season where he made a mistake and somebody was then more or less had a clean run in from the halfway line, and Matthews then managed to recover over the course of the half. Matthews overtook the guy and put in a defensive challenge. A couple of times I thought, Matthews in games, I think he's recovered from a mistake he's made. He's got himself out of jail because of the pace he's got to be able to recover.
No, he's a smashing player. And I think, there's that today, a Celtic right back, modern tradition, Mark Wilson. I think he's a step above that.
Yes.
Jackie Mack and all that. I just think Matthews might be a step, a step above that. I'm astonished. But what is he, 20, 21? He's still really young.
Yeah.
I'm astonished that we got him, actually, when you actually look back on it.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, I look at him and I think it's one of the best right backs that I've seen at Celtic Park for 20, 30 years.
Yeah. No, he's a really smashing player. I can't imagine that we'll hold on to him for too long, before the business plan starts kicking in.
Yeah. So, we've got against Hearts, so you're going for what, about 7-0 to Celtic?
I think it'll be a squish case, as we used to say in Stirling. 2-3-0. I mean, I can't imagine they've got much that will threaten us, in an attacking sense. So I can't see them scoring. It just depends on,
it's their game of the season. And it's probably the one game where most of our players are going to be playing the game wanting to not get an injury. That's the only thing for me about it.
Yeah. It's funny that, though, isn't it? Remember the days, a couple of old-timers here. Going to Tynecastle was epic.
Yeah.
And I remember, go to Tynecastle on a Wednesday night in December and, it was just magical, wasn't it? It'd be raining and you'd see the rain coming down in the floodlights. And you'd be sitting there, and it was cold, and you were wrapped up, and the place was going mental. It was a real occasion.
Oh, see, when I talk to people as well about the Old Firm rivalry and Celtic Rangers and all that stuff, and the people who don't really know it, they talk about the CTA and stuff. And I'll often say, actually, see my 3-year-old when he starts going to the football, the ground that I'll probably take him to last because of the type of atmosphere engendered in it is Tynecastle. I take him to Ibrox before I take him to Tynecastle.
My pal played for Hearts, John Cahoon, I'd go and see a lot of Hearts games, and it was it's quite a place, although again it's a few years since I've been now, but those games, it's just a kind of shame that Hearts are in the dilapidated state that they're in. Because they're a big club.
They are. And they are one of the three clubs in Scotland who should be making hay while there's no Rangers in the top league in Scottish football. Then Hibs and Aberdeen finishing in the top three or four to maximise their revenue and get European football on a regular basis.
Yeah. So they do can get knocked out in the first round.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Talking of John Coon, John Coon, I always felt sorry for John Coon. I always felt if he just stayed at Celtic about a year longer, and then Davy Provan had that illness and was out.
Well, I'm not going to tell tales out of school, I played the same school team as him, actually. What a player. He's one of those guys, when you're all growing up, there's guys who are really good, amazing, they're 12, 13, they're brilliant. JC was never like that. He was just... He was one of these guys who got steadily better every single year, and all of a sudden he was five times better than you were.
Yes.
And then he went off and he signed for Stirling Albion. I think he scored 60 goals for Stirling Albion Sweden or something like that. It's just amazing. And he was a big Celtic fan, like we all were. And I think it was Davy Hay.
Yeah.
Davy Hay, you know, it was two right wingers, weren't there? It was Crovin and then there was Gehring.
Yeah.
Crovin got the nod. We'll leave it at that.
Right. Okay. You can tell me on another day.
No, it's not like sinister. You know, it's just, you know, and the best man lost.
No, but you know, that's the difference between football back then and football now. Because football now, there was only one place, and it was Davy Provins, so Cahoon left. Whereas modern football, Davy Provins wouldn't have played every week, John Cahoon would have played quite a bit, and then John Cahoon would have stayed around, and Davy Provins would have eased out, and Cahoon would have come through.
And the other thing is, you know, we wouldn't have been playing 4-3-3 or 4-4-2 or whatever it was, but, you know, every week.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the way that Lennon sets up a team. You sometimes think he's just changing tactics just to keep himself entertained, you know, or amused or something like that. You know, there seems to be a different system out, you know, every week, which is fine, you know, as long as you're winning the games. But now, I mean, tactics and team formation are so flexible now, you know, compared to what they used to be. So, yeah. But you're dead right. You know, that's a position. You've got one guy for that, and the rest of you can all piss off.
So after Hearts, we then fly to Milan as a team. You and I don't. You might be for all I know. I'm not going.
No, I'm not.
You'll be setting off tomorrow.
So
what's your expectation? I've been and watched Celtic play in Milan, and we didn't lose a goal over 90 minutes.
Was that the 2006 game?
Yeah, well, Maldini pulled off that brilliant save.
I was at that game as well. And the two abiding memories were the absolutely disgraceful refereeing and the fact that I left my passport in the hotel when I left. And we got to the Milan airport and I had to go all the way back and, you know, panicking because I'm coming home to the States after that. And, you know, if I don't have my passport and a visa, I am stuffed because it takes 2 weeks to get an American visa. Anyway, got my passport back. But that game, yeah, we should have won that game. Darren O'Day was magnificent that night.
Yeah.
I think we played them off the park. I couldn't believe, and Kaká scored an extra time. So there you go.
And then actually, one of my other, this is, we need to learn about how to play in Europe matches was, when under O'Neill and we lost 3-1 to Milan, and it was one each, always remember, it was one each with about a minute to go, and we got a free kick in our half, about 20 yards from our goal. And they win the game 3-1. And the point I remember saying to people, if it had been the other way around, we would just have never have touched the ball for the rest of the game.
That's right, yeah.
You know, simple things like O'Neill would have got, you know, somebody goes down injured and O'Neill would have then said to, for example, John Hartson, right, John, I want you to be at the opposite side of the park because the next time play stopped, you're coming off. And it's you, John, because you're the slowest guy in the park, so you can have an excuse for walking off the pitch.
You've got to bring that big fat arse all the way from the field.
But one each, a minute to go, free kick, deep inside your own half, you lose the game 3-1. It's, as I say, a foreign team wouldn't do it, and that was, I remember ranting and raving for days after that game about can we still not learn how to play away from home in Europe.
Still
random Raven. I'm still getting agitated. It's like I still get annoyed about Joe Miller not passing to Andy Walker when it was 5-3 in the Partizan Belgrade game. But anyway, that's another matter.
It was another game I was at. I never saw you that night.
I don't know. I was the guy wearing the hoops.
Hey, I'm very good. I was actually at the Rangers. I took a pal of mine. We drove up from Newcastle for that game. That was a brilliant night, actually.
Yeah.
That was one of those nights, really dark, and the rain was coming down. It's on Celtic TV in the archives, by the way, if you ever wanted to relive the moment. Anyway,
so
next week.
What's your expectation?
I'm speaking from a position of ignorance on AC Milan. I mean, I've really not, you know, haven't noticed, haven't looked. So I really don't know. From what I can, an ephemeral reading that they're not as good as people think they are, but, you know, I'm not so sure about that. Depends what we want out of it. You know, do we want to start like last year? You know, well, I know Benfica at home last year basically set up to make sure we didn't leave that game without a point.
Yeah.
You know, you go, there's two ways of doing it. You go the Barcelona way, you play 5-4-1, you know, two banks of two banks, or 4-4, or 4-4-1-1, or whatever, two banks of four right in front of the 18-yard box, and try and defend, you know, try and nick something on the break, right? And try and get a 0-0, or it's, you know, stop them scoring. Or there's the other way, you go the Spartak Moscow way, or the Udinese. You know, I think, you know, looking back, you look at back in recent, you know, European campaigns, I think the game in Udinese is a high point.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was a turning point for the kind of modern Celtic team. I think Udinese, I knew they were top of Serie A. I think they'd slipped to third by the time we got there to play them.
Yeah.
Over there. And I think we set 4-2-3-1 or something like that, you know. And really took the game to them. And I think they were shocked by that. Absolutely shocked. They couldn't believe it. They thought, okay, bunch of Scottish heifers coming in here, they'll defend for all their lives. And lo and behold, we come in, you know, we're a bit, you know, fast, flexible, confident on the ball. James Forrest running amok, you know, just taking the piss out of guys. And we won up, and Di Natale next one, you know, to get there. They're lucky to escape with a draw, but basically, you know, we should have won that game. So that's the other way, you know, same as Spartak Moscow, you know, they probably expected us to go there, defend deep, or try and, you know, try and get away with a, you know, nick a point or even nick a win. We go there. So, I mean, I remember watching at the time, Scott Brown's actually in advance of Gary Hooper. You know, that's, you know, he was a hit, you know, Hooper was further down the field, you know, further up the field, or further down the field than Scott Brown. He really took the game to them, really took, you know, didn't sit back. So there's two ways of looking at it. That's my kind of opinion on it. I don't have no idea what you know, no winning. He'll probably go for the latter. He might go the Juventus kamikaze way, you know, it's press them high up the field, you know, try and surprise them with the fact that we're willing to take them on. Who knows? You know?
But I think in many ways, the sort of modern the modern defensive style is to be further up the park, pressing people further up the park. I mean, that's, you know, the 5-second rule that Barcelona introduced of even a player the quality of Messi has a responsibility to press the ball as far away from your own goal as possible.
I'm talking from a position. I should have had a look this morning. Total Ingers and what AC Milan. I don't even know where they are in Serie A, to be honest. I don't know what can I start.
Why? Look, it's podcast 199. Why change 199 podcasts of the past and do any sort of research?
Right. So if I was Lennon, I would be playing. I tell you, and I swear to God, I'll go to my grave. I would always play 4-2-3-1. Right. I think it's a brilliant system. It's very flexible. Only thing is, who are we going to play up front? You know, I could trust Hooper to do that. You know, he'd have quality to do that. He'd hold the ball in. You know, he'd make your goals. A sensational finisher. I just don't know. Again, it depends a lot. I don't know what this Finnish kid's going to be like. He might be the guy to do that. I mean, who knows? But I would kind of go for it. You know, because I think we're not. You know, we're better than a lot of people think. You know, I think we've got good players. You know, look at Mulgrew against Belgium last week. You know, I didn't see only sort of higher, but I mean, he really did. He didn't look out of place. Well, we've got players like that. Scott, I think I read somebody this morning, you know, Scott Brown, calling Scott Brown world class. Well, that's probably overstating it, obviously.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, but we have got good players in every single position. So, you know, let's take advantage of them. Let's not just sit back. I mean, obviously, don't be ridiculous. Don't be, you know, don't set up to, you know, attack the whole game. But, you know, give yourself the option of, you know, as you say, defend further up the field. You know, try and press it a little bit and see if we can actually beat them. Because your first game's away in Europe, you get beat. You expect to get beat anyway, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you expect to lose your games in Europe. So that would be me. That's what I would do
anyway. And to be fair, all I'm looking for is, as long as you don't get a demoralising result,
where you really get a doing,
as long as you don't get that, then, as you say, we're playing AC Milan in the San Siro, we're not expected to do anything. So if we manage to then get a result, a draw, if we get a victory, suddenly you're changing the mentality that we're going for second place in the group.
Oh, can you imagine if they actually won? I can't actually see it. If I knew something about AC Milan, I would be able to judge how surprising that would be. But
if you knew about AC Milan, you knew about Pukki, you'd be able to make a judgment.
But as I say, we've got decent, really good, you know, champions, well, not Champions League quality in every position, but certainly Champions League quality player in, you know, six or seven positions. You know, you go through the team, Foster, probably. Lustig, well, big time Swedish international. Central defence, not quite yet. I mean, certainly, I don't know, sure about Effie. Is he here? I don't think. I think he's shaded quite a lot.
Yeah.
Groom Brown, definitely. Middle three, Cutwells, Samaras, Commons, Forrest, probably. There's two out of three Champions League quality, certainly. Up front, probably play the Swedish belt, the Finnish guy.
Yeah.
Looking forward, I can't wait, actually. It's going to be fantastic. I'll be sitting here. The game starts at 11:45 here in California, so get the wee man off to school, get a bit of writing done in the morning, maybe sneak in an hour and a half of writing, and then everything off, telly on. I tell you, this is the interesting thing. The soccer, the football is on Fox Soccer over here, mm-hmm. and going the playoff round, there was a million ties going on, and the tie that Fox Soccer picked was Celtic Carrigandy. That's right. One of all the ties that they picked. You know, so it obviously says something about their expectations for viewing figures and all that. But I'm not sure what game, I'm not sure if the Celtic game will be on. You know, I need to check the TV schedules over here. But I mean, if they picked the Celtic AC Milan, that would really, what a compliment that would be.
It would be, and it would also mean that you don't have to watch a stupid, crappy stream. You can actually watch a decent picture.
Oh, no, well. Oh no! Hang on, let me say a word in praise of Celtic TV.
Okay.
I'll be on. I'm imagining I'll be on the Celtic. Oh Christ, it might not be actually. I'm not sure if there's a rule about the European ties. Oh God! Don't say that. You've now got me all concerned. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Tweet Tony Hamilton. Do an Eddie Pearson, and when we're in the middle of this conversation, send a tweet to Tony Hamilton asking him.
Actually, no. It's getting on here. Actually, I've got to go and pick up Lee Man from school.
You need to leave in 2 minutes.
Exactly. So that's the way. That's the way I would go. I would be a bit more progressive thinking next week. I wouldn't go there and just try and defend for our lives. I don't think we need to. I think that would give us the element of surprise. I think we've got quality of players that could maybe do something over there. But we'll see. When we'll probably set it up 7-3-0 or something.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if it was 4-2-3-1 or maybe 4-3-2-1. But as you say, 4-2-3-1 is actually quite good because it's flexible. Somebody can drop back and whatever.
We just sound like two absolute ignoramuses, tactical wise.
Oh yes, exactly. We are Celtic podcast hipsters extraordinaire on this with it. Yeah.
Let me talk to Jonathan Wilson. We'll come back to you next Tuesday.
Okay, well, I better let you go so that you've not got a wee man hanging about school gates waiting for his dad to come and pick him up.
Okay, hopefully you enjoyed that. And as I said at the beginning, that was the end of podcast 199. So the next one is podcast number 200. Following in the footsteps of my predecessor in the cave, Eddie Pearson, I think we're going to have a 200 A, B, C, D, etc. Planned out for the next podcast. Well, I gave you a hint in the last one, the Stan Petrov one. It's going to be Champions League related. We've got the Milan game coming up on Tuesday night. And, the plan for me on here, with a little help from some of my friends on CelticUnderground.net, we will be suggesting Celtic's greatest Champions League team. We'll be going through the keepers, the defenders, the midfielders, the strikers, the formation and the manager, through Twitter, on the site, and through email. I'll be asking if people can vote on, as each podcast takes place, if people can vote on who their favourite player of each position was. And then on the site, at the end of all the podcasts, we will then run a Celtic team of the Champions League. And it is the Champions League. It is playing in the group stages or last 16 in the Champions League. It's not the qualifying rounds and it's not pre-Champions League. I know European Cup, blah, 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 blah. I just wanted to do something for the modern era, going back to 2001 and seeing where we are. So hopefully you enjoyed the podcast with Lawrence. Hopefully you're going to enjoy the podcast around the 200s and some interesting choosing of Celtic players. In the meantime, here's from Milan. Fingers crossed. Come on, the Hoops.
Just for one day.